All right, so today's a talk on joy, one of my favorite subjects. It's something I aspire to be and live and breathe and do on a daily basis, moment to moment. So I have a plethora of stories for you today, and we're going to just see if that feels good and if it resonates. And if it doesn't, we're going to find something else that resonates. So I'm going to start off with this one that I found on Facebook this week. I think the author's name was Carrie Lake, and she wrote this on her blog, and I just loved it. So we're going to start here, and then we're going to build, okay? So the story is called The Queen of Grumpatopia. Have you ever been to Grumpatopia before? It's a magical land that's been very misunderstood. Long ago, a beautiful queen ruled a beautiful land. She didn't want to rule the land, though, because all the forest creatures and people seemed to change the way they looked at her once she became queen. She didn't even know how it happened. Just one day, now she was queen, and it felt very heavy to her. She tried pretending she wasn't the queen, but in an already magical world, trying to pretend she's not what she is made things even more heavy. All she wanted to do was play with her friends and have everything feel how it felt before she was queen. Her friends wanted that too, she thought, but how can that be possible when Grumpatopia needs a queen and she was it? Well, one day a dear old friend came to visit the queen. Brock! Hello, beautiful, greeted her old friend, the forest toad. Grumpatopia is looking great these days. Thank you for all that you do. What are you talking about? The queen complained as she threw her hands in the air. I'm still in Grumpatopia and nothing is going right. I should not be queen. The swamps are stinky. The walk through the forest is slow because of the tangled underbrush. And my friends all treat me different now because my focus is required elsewhere. How is this great, Toad? How is this great? The forest toad had been her friend for a long, long time, and he loved the queen very much. So he explained to her that she wasn't seeing. Because you are focused elsewhere, my queen, your friends aren't sure if they still belong in your life. But every time you show up, their confusion lifts and they understand. They don't care how they interact with you, but they all know that you have to be you, and you're the queen. Even in their confusion, they love you for it. And slowness through the forest has let a new generation of bunnies come to life, and so many other travelers worn down their grass and nasty snacks. Now, with more new life blooming, so many more can play together. You just can't see them yet as they scurry around, still protected by the tangles in the underbrush. But they're there, and that stinky swamp, well, that's my favorite place to be. Flies love stinky swamps, and I love eating flies. My belly is full because of that swamp, so I like Grumpatopia, and everything here is alive and well. The queen couldn't help but smile at this point. After all, she loved the forest toad, and the thought of his full belly was more fun than worrying about any tangled brambles. But what about me? She asked the forest toad. My friends don't know where they belong in my life. I'm grumpy that I have to be alone to run Grumpatopia all by myself. Alone? The forest toad was really perplexed. Everyone awaits your arrival. Everyone awaits the moment we all celebrate together. What do they want to celebrate? The queen asked. They want to celebrate that you are queen, of course. None of them could be queen because it is you who is queen. They were all tired of watching you be a housemaiden. Don't they hate me, though, for being different than them? My queen, my friend, you being different from them is what keeps them going. They still only know their confusion, trying to see where they fit in your life. And I'll tell you a secret. Their confusion is what makes the swamp stinky. It's what makes the bushes tangly. It's what makes Grumpatopia what it is today. But what about me? Asked the queen. What about my happiness? Where in Grumpatopia is my enjoyment? Her beloved friend embraced her with all his heart because he knew how uncomfortable she was with not knowing the answers. He touched her face with great gentleness and said, "My beloved friend, you are the queen of a magical kingdom that is just coming back to life. Now more than ever is the time for you yourself may be nourished by the richness created from decaying remnants of the old. But I ask you, because only the queen can answer, what is it that you enjoy?" The queen realized that becoming queen had been such a sudden thing, it made her feel so different so quickly that she didn't notice anymore what she enjoyed. "I don't know what I enjoy," she confided into her old friend, the forest toad, and he smiled a big amphibious smile. "Well then," he went on, "if I may offer my assistance to my queen with full acknowledgement that I cannot possibly understand the full extent of Her Majesty's uniqueness, I invite you to join me at the Stinky Swamp, where I love eating flies. You may not enjoy that as much as I do, but you might enjoy our walk together." The queen smiled a soft smile, one she hadn't felt in a long time, and said, "Okay, I'll go." On the way there, the queen's clothes were caught and torn on the brambles. "See," she said, to the forest toad, demanding his attention, "what about this ugliness? Now my clothes are ripped and ruffled." But the forest toad did not hear her. He didn't notice the rips in her gown. He didn't feel the frustration in her expression. He was too busy filling his belly with flies, hopping around with the biggest amphibious smile on his face. And his belly was getting very plump. The queen felt all of her frustration push inside her. She thought the top of her head was about to explode off the top of her head. And that's when Bunny appeared. "Queen," she gasped, "why are you here? You must hate this place after living in a palace." The queen wanted to scream, "Yes, yes, yes," but her voice would not scream. It had been so long since she talked to a bunny, and since a bunny talked to her. "Hi, Bunny, are you enjoying the forest?" "Oh, yes," said the bunny. "I especially like the tangles and the confusion they create. I can stay hidden and eat sweet little grasses, and that's just perfect for me. It gives me protection and makes me feel safe." This made sense to the queen. Of course the bunny would enjoy that, but what did the queen enjoy? "My dear queen, what an honor it is to see you smile." The queen didn't even realize she was smiling. The bunny hopped off into the brush and the queen looked at her tattered dress. She thought for a moment as she walked out to find the forest toad. It turned out that he hopped away looking for more flies in his belly. No matter, he'll show up again sometime. But there were still these brambles. How horrible that a queen should have to navigate all these all by herself. She was learning that she did not enjoy this part of the walk and that her friends had both hopped away. A little bird startled the queen when she arrived and sat on a branch above. "Queen," she chirped, "I'm not going to stay with you, but I have a message." "Okay," the queen said, feeling apprehensive about what was about to happen, whether this will be enjoyable to her or not. "Keep going," sang the bird as she flew away. Now the queen started to notice something. Everyone was going away, yet they all encouraged her to keep going. The queen wouldn't enjoy living any of their lives, but they all loved their lives, as stinky and confused as they were. And the queen said, Walking further, the way opened up. She thought of the forest toad's question. What does she enjoy? And she still didn't have the answer. But something was different. She had walked through the brambles, through the forest, torn her dress, had friends come and go, and still no one stood by her side. How was she to know what she enjoyed with no one by her side? And a little spark began to grow, and she started to see something new. She started to see something she, the queen of Grumpatopia, really enjoys. She enjoys having friends by her side. Her friends weren't always right there next to her. They were eating flies and sweet grasses. Just the thought of them felt warm, though, as she began to walk back toward the palace and mend her dress. Her friends were flying around and delivering messages, and she considered all of this, she noticed, just like the forest and the bunny noticed, the queen was smiling. She walked out for a bit and considering the new sensations of her enjoying her friends and enjoying herself. She realized she had become lost in the forest. Suddenly, feeling quite alone, she felt desperately like she had to get back to somewhere familiar, back to Grumpatopia, and she put her hands on her face, thinking she might cry. Just then, a man dressed as though he was quite familiar with the nature of the forest walked towards her from somewhere. He said to her and offered her a handkerchief, "You look like you could use a friend." So that was a very joyful little tale, right? It's a beautiful reminder of how, you know, sometimes our perception it steers us away from joy, but joy is just an internal feeling. So let's see which other one. So as I was preparing for this talk this week, you know, I just let it happen, just let it unfold naturally. And in my meditation yesterday, what came up for me personally was, you know, this concept of, I should be doing this, I should be doing that. And, you know, we've heard this term, shoulding yourself to death, right? So I found a beautiful article that just, it's very brief, that talks about that. So I'll share that with you. Are you shoulding yourself to death all day, every day? Are you telling yourself what you should do? Have you forgotten what you want? If you are like most people, the answer is yes. Here's the should list bestsellers. You should be grateful to be alive. You should forgive. You should be compassionate. You should meditate. You should give back. You should be able to do nothing. You should be productive. You should declutter. You should take more trips. You should appreciate what you have. You should spend more time with your friends and family. You should spend more time with your kids. You should have more fun. You should spend less time on technology. You should have more sex. You should want to have more sex. You should laugh more. You should lose weight. You should exercise more. You should drink less, and you should be happier. Whatever the specific shoulds in on your list, they always add up to the same should. You should be better. You should, the should police are here to tell you, as you are, that you are not good enough. We are afraid what will happen if we stop shoulding all over ourselves. We have been taught mistakenly that if we don't should ourselves into action, we will become like those giant sloths that hang on trees in earth. And worse, if we don't should ourselves into being good, we won't be good. If not controlled, we would be unkind, ungrateful, ungenerous, unproductive, and every other un you can think of. Quite a vision of our basic nature. Shoulding all over ourselves actually strengthens our belief that left to our own devices, we cannot be trusted. Because so much of our behavior is driven by a should, we are losing our ability to distinguish what we really want. We have been taught what we should want, but no longer know what we actually want, and often confuse the two. Out of touch with our own wanting, we have lost a sense of intimacy with ourselves. We know who we are and who we are supposed to be, but we are not who we are. To correct the should-want imbalance and bring us back into the alignment of our true selves, I suggest the following practices. And there's only about 8 of them. Only, yeah. Okay, so number one, ask yourself throughout the day, am I doing this because I want to? Or because I should? If it's because you should, then why do I believe I should? What do I fear will happen if I don't do it? And then recognize, finally, notice if recognizing your choice as a should changes the choice itself or the way it feels to carry it out. Even if your actions remain unchanged, simply identifying your choice as a should or want is meaningful and will help you know your true motivations and intentions, and thus know yourself. Number two, set aside a period of time, or at least an hour every day, as a should-free zone, a time you only attend to that which you want. If anything shows up as a should, set it aside for later or let it go altogether. If no want shows up, that's fine, as it may take some time for a want to actually form inside you. Remember, want itself has become weak.
Atrophied.
Weak, yes, thank you. Like an underused muscle. Sometimes the want is just to do nothing, so listen to what that want as well. Through these practices, we often discover that we are not what we assumed or we were taught to believe, and we stop telling ourselves that we should be good, and it turns out, much to our surprise, that we are innately good. Our natural instinct is, in fact, to be compassionate and kind. Being good simply feels good. We will stop forcing ourselves to be good in order to check it off that should to-do list, and instead allow our inherent goodness to lead us into action. We feel nourished and full, simultaneously receiving the goodness that we offer. Goodness that emanates from want feels radically different and even better than goodness that comes from a should. We may also discover that we want some things that we could cut. We may also discover that we want some things that we could never imagine wanting. One woman assured me that she would absolutely, positively never want to exercise, and never do it if she didn't should herself into it. I gave her a challenge to stop exercising until she genuinely wanted to. If the wanting didn't appear, she would simply return to exercising because she should. Lo and behold, 23 days later, a desire to move showed up. It turned out that her body wanted her to walk in the park, not on a treadmill as she had been doing for 25 years. And surprisingly, there was also a craving for swimming, something she had never considered. "Who is this person that actually wants to move and swim and all of these things?" she exclaimed. It was an enlightening discovery to realize that she was not someone who wanted to lie on the couch and eat bonbons all day. The act of suspending should and giving want a chance allowed her to emerge and meet her true self. Sometimes want never comes. There are things we do in life strictly because we should, and some of them are very important. I'm not suggesting that we stop being responsible adults. However, when we do something because we should, and we mindfully acknowledge that should, then we can offer ourselves compassion in the doing. We can take good care of ourselves and honor the wisdom and strength of our discernment to choose to do something even when we simultaneously do not want to do it. The choice is made mindfully, and in and of itself feels both loving and empowering. Even hard choices, when made in the light of awareness, are nurturing and satisfying, which is not the case when we're blindly obeying that should. Becoming aware of our relationship with that should and want allows us to meet who we really are. Simultaneously, it gives us freedom. We are aware of the forces that are driving our actions. We can decide how we want to live and break free from the tyranny of a should. We have been trained to believe in should and fear want, but in this conditioning, with a little practice, can also be undone and retrained. Start offering your should police a day off here and now, and get ready to meet someone you have never known yourself. So how am I doing on time? Does anybody know? okay, so that. Cleared that space, right? We're not feeling like we need to shoot ourselves anymore. So back to our topic, our main topic of joy. Am I okay on time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
it's 46, so we've got quite a bit of time left.
Uh-huh.
Oh, but we need time for music, so.
So just
10 more minutes.
Just give me a signal. Yeah, okay. So, this next little snippet. Well, no. Since I have 10 minutes, let's just read one more little snippet that you guys can actually have something practical when you walk away with. So along this theme of shooting all over yourself, I found another article that I enjoy from this author that I have her books on my shelf that I haven't read them yet, this new Hay House author, Lisa Rankin. had a blog on the Hay House website, and I pulled this down. How shoulds interfere with soul guidance? Consider the times you've ignored your soul's guidance. Chances are good that you did so because you thought you should. The wedding invites are already sent. You should go through to the wedding. You've already spent so many years training for the job your soul wants to leave. The money is good. It's a secure job in an insecure economy. You should stay. Your soul is telling you you don't have to take care of the elderly relative who treats you like dirt, but another part of you thinks you should. You're working yourself to death paying for the fancy house in the private school, and your soul is telling you to simplify, downsize, send the kids to public school, but you don't think you should sacrifice their quality of life for yours. Your soul doesn't want to go to church anymore, but you should. Your soul doesn't want you to hang out with the friend you've known for 20 years anymore, but you should. Your soul doesn't want the missionary position and wants to get down and dirty, but you should not let yourself fantasize on that the way you do. Your soul wants to dance under the moonlight, but you should go to the gym. Your soul wants to eat dark chocolate, but you should eat kale. God forbid you should allow yourself to follow your soul's guidance. All hell might break loose, and there could be anarchy. So overriding the soul's guidance, because we're so full of ideas and judgments about what we should and shouldn't do, we tend to talk ourselves out of our soul's guidance. We don't trust that our souls knows what's best for us, so we tend to write it off. We write off our soul's guidance as mere coincidence or whimsy or even folly. To both, pay attention. Soul guidance may require radical acts of courage and can feel terrifying. Where will my soul lead me? How uncomfortable will I have to get? How much uncertainty will I need to tolerate? The soul doesn't care about certainty. The soul cares about freedom. When the soul has to yell, every time we override the soul's guidance, the soul tends to get louder, not because you don't have free will and not because the soul is punishing you, but because the soul is always trying to get through to you. The soul doesn't necessarily speak the same language as you, so it may not just start off rattling off soul guidance in your ear. Instead, it will use anything it can, dreams, emails, signs, people who show up with messages for you, physical symptoms, gut instincts, bumper stickers, synchronicities that make you pay attention. The soul is always trying to guide you, but when you repetitively ignore it, it has to get crafty. It has to get special. It has to get creative. Sometimes you wind up clobbered with the proverbial 2x4. The soul's guidance may start as a guiding dream or a persistent thought or a book or blog post that seems to speak to you directly. But if you ignore the soul's guidance, the soul may guide you through painful interventions like loss or illness. The soul is always yearning to wake you up and free you from all your shoulds. It will use any vehicle at its disposal to help you face the truth about who you are and what is aligned with your true self. So pay attention. Okay, I think I can do it. All right, so another one of my favorite authors, Carol Tuttle, she had written a blog post, and I think it's in one of her books, Remembering Truth or Remembering Wholeness. She has these 5 steps about manifesting what we want. Why can't we manifest what we want? So I'm going to reread these, and I know you've probably heard them before, but they work. So as my soul's guidance, I'm following it and getting on my soapbox and reminding you of these beautiful steps. So the first step is to know what you want, to have a desire. Step 2 is to ask for what you want. Ask God, ask the angels, ask the universe. You are asking a power greater than yourself to assist you in creating it. Step 3 is to believe you can have it, to have faith free of any doubt that you desire, that what you desire and have asked for is going to manifest for you. Step 4 is to let go and allow, to simply get out of your own way, to allow spirit to be in charge of bringing your desire to you. The only job you have at this point is to follow through with any inspiration regarding physical actions on behalf of your manifestation. The fifth and last step is to express gratitude. Gratitude actually starts the cycle all over again. It is the completion and the beginning of the creative process. Gratitude energy initiates the manifestation in your life of things for what you can feel gratitude. The creation process is one internal round. When practiced with humility, it can only bring us more of what we want. I am frequently asked the question, how come I am having such a hard time manifesting what I want? I've been practicing new beliefs and affirmations, I'm doing the steps, and it's still not happening. I teach the following technique to help people see more clearly why their desires aren't being met. First, examine your desire. Let's use it as an example of wanting a new car. Let's say you really want a car that's reliable, fun to drive, good-looking, and reasonably priced. Rate your desire for the car on a scale from 0 to 10, 10 being the strongest, 0 being the weakest. For most people, anything they really want is a 10. So in this case, your desire for a new car is a 10. Second, examine your belief. Do you believe you deserve a new car, that you can have the kind of car you want, that it will show up easily and effortlessly, that it will be as good or even better than what you've asked for? Now rate your belief on the same scale, 0 to 10. Is your belief that you can have and receive what you want as strong as your desire? Using the example of a new car again, let's pretend your desire for the car is a 10, yet your belief for the car is at a 3. This energy imbalance will keep you from attracting what you want. When there is a discrepancy between the energy of your desire and the energy of your belief, you cannot attract into your life what you want. When your desire is a 10 and your belief is a 10, you come into vibrational harmony with all that you want, and it'll manifest for you. So the next time you are frustrated because you are not manifesting what you want, rate your desire and your belief. How do they match up? For most people, it'll shrink their desire rather than energize their belief, and therefore settle for less. Instead of reducing your desires, energize your beliefs. If you reduce the desire and settle for less, you will feel disappointed and more convinced that you cannot have what you want. Energize your belief up to a 10 to match your desire, and it will feel better. As you increase your beliefs to match your desires, you will be amazed how fast and how flawlessly your desires manifest for you. Another way of manifesting what you want comes when you are emotionally attached to the desire. When you need what you have asked for, you are also fearful that it might not happen, and this can halt the flow of your desire coming to you. A method to help you get to let go of the fear is to imagine not receiving your desire. In your mind, imagine not getting what you want. It just doesn't happen. How would you feel? Ask yourself, what is the worst thing that could happen if I don't get what I want? By asking yourself this question and giving an honest answer, you realize that there is no real reason to be afraid. You balance the energy by allowing yourself to imagine and feel your fear. This diffuses the fear and allows you to stay in a neutral place, which allows for what you've asked for to manifest. And finally, if you are still not getting what you want, consider the possibility that your timing is off. It may not be the right time, or perhaps it's not in your highest and greatest good to receive it right now. As you continue to play with these steps, make sure you are having fun. If you get serious and stressed with the steps, you will create a kind of interference. Keep it light and free. We really do not need anything. Once we fully realize this, we find it easy to let go. And when this is when miracles really start to fly into our lives. Okay, great. So I just want to leave you with a few quick affirmations on joy from another group of my favorite authors, Sonia Roman, and who channels entities named Oren and Bent. So they have a book called Living Your Joy, or Living to Joy, and I pulled some affirmations from their book. So we had started this talk about, really getting into the truth of who you are, allowing yourself to feel your soul's energy. So you want to tune into your soul and sound your soul's note of joy often. You know, if you could get a feeling or thought or imagine or a sound of how joy would feel to you, just get in the habit of practicing that soul note of joy often. And joy is a feeling in the present moment, not something you will have in the future. What brings your life joy? How do you know? Are you aware which makes you happy? Just feel good. Choose to feel good right here, right now. Know that the universe is always working for you. You cannot know the joy and perfection of your being. Believe that the universe is perfect and always working for you. Recognize that everything that is happening in your life is for your higher good, even if you can't understand why. Listen to the quiet, that reassuring voice of your soul. It is that still quiet voice of peace, that reassuring voice that tells you everything will be all right and that the universe is working for you. Your soul loves and accepts you. It sees the beauty and the perfection of your being. Believe that the future holds joy and promise. Let go of any fears or beliefs that the future will be worse than the present, and allow yourself to feel joy. Laugh and play, put a smile in your heart, and don't take yourself so seriously. Laugh and play. It is not the end of your world if something does not go right. The quality of humor is perhaps one of the greatest doorways to joy and self-love. Laugh, smile at others, and put a smile in your heart, and let yourself sing. So thank you.